Do we need to record like a, I don't, do we need like an intro for the second part or something? I don't know. I don't really care a lot.
All right, so we're recording the second part of our end of the year preview. We brought you some great stuff. We're going to bring you some more great stuff, Dave. Can you believe how great 2016 was?
I can't believe you just said 2016 was so great, but I'm happy. I'm happy you're feeling optimistic. It must be from all the wonderful people we've been talking to. And I'm just excited to talk to more.
Hey, handsome.
Hello, handsomes. Okay.
I feel like Jack Bangeter's my friend now. He's my old friend, too. It's
not we are. We are. We're good friends.
That's right.
Well, Jack, as our listeners now well know, we're doing a year in the review, 2016, and we're bringing in experts to talk about various topics that matter a lot. You are our art and culture expert.
That's quite an honor, but I'm not sure I deserve it.
Just we'll let the listeners be the judge of that once they hear your recommendations and recap of 2016. First, okay, and most cool. Important question. We all know that the highest human achievement is hairstylists. And when Dave was off the show, we talked about sports hair quite a lot. So we laid down some really strong tracks on that. But the big question, outside of just sports hair, just in the world at large, what was the hairstyle of the year?
You know, if you would have asked me a week ago, I would have had no idea. But I saw like a YouTube video the other day of this guy cutting The Last Supper, Da Vinci's The Last Supper, or Michelangelo, Da Vinci.
Both of their Last Suppers, as far as I'm concerned.
Everybody's Last Supper. the only one that matters, the last one, into the hair of a young child. And it was pretty impressive, do.
Jack, I normally don't give YouTube videos much credence, but this one changed my life. I was like, oh yeah, it's going to just be terrible. But I think from now on, they're not going to call it Da Vinci's Last Supper. They're going to call it some barber dude's Last Supper. He like redefined the painting. He made it his own. It was incredible.
Especially at the end of the video when he bumps his fists together and he has tattooed on his hands, original. It, like, takes all the credit from everybody else who's ever done The Last Supper. It's like, everybody else's isn't original anymore. Took the cake.
Well, he's taking it to a new level. My first thought on completing that video was, if I had had this haircut while I was serving my Mormon mission in England, the baptisms would have been countless. I wish, if I could go back in time and do it, yeah. I just.
How do you do on baptisms otherwise?
Not well. Not well.
Okay.
If we're counting number wise, no.
So, future Mormon missionaries, please get this haircut.
Yeah.
Please.
The original. Get it from original. And, you know, wouldn't that be amazing if Mormon, like, standard Mormon issue people, they weren't just known by being the guys in the shirts and ties, but they were the guys in the shirts and the ties with the Last Supper carved into the back of their head.
How did that fly with the, like, I know there are some rules about, like, what kind of haircuts you can have on your mission, right?
It does, as long as, the third apostle qualifies as a part, I think there was enough of a dividing line there that it's probably okay.
Okay.
What would you say, Dave?
And I think, you know, I don't know that the prophet has seen this video, so once he sees that video, I think there'll be... A lot of changes to haircut protocol.
Mormons do believe in modern revelation, Jack, so there's always a chance.
All right. I'll try and put in a good word with the prophet also.
He's a relative, I think, right, Jack?
Yeah, he is sort of a relative.
Okay. Well, at least email him the video if you can do that.
Yeah.
He always waits for Jack's Christmas cards before he writes his conference talks. So. All right, so the second question for you is, art and culture, the purpose of these for some people is to assuage sadness, and for others it's to produce happiness. Happiest moment of 2016. It was a dark year.
It was very dark. You know, I just I got by on this year by talking to my friends and seeing friends, because it was a pretty tough one. Not only the election fiasco, which like took most of my time throughout the year too, just being pretty upset about all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But then I also went through a divorce and stuff this year too. So friends were where it's at. Friends were where it's at.
Amen.
Amen. But now I'm feeling good. Except for the election thing still.
Yeah, that's not going to change anytime soon, Jack. But happiest moments, I think, have to be with others. If I was going happiest moment, I guess the birth of my twin babies.
You guess.
But really, it's like, that's awesome, but it's really about the moments since then that I've spent with them, and those are the happiest moments. Because watching babies get born is awesome, but it's really the just the time you get to spend with them after that's so special. Hmm.
All right, let's talk about art. Let's get the real deal, Jack. You're the most prolific artist on this podcast right now. So we want to know, what did you make this year? What was the 2016 in the year of the Jack Bangeter Art Factory?
I don't know. I do make quite a bit of artwork. I was a little slower this year. I think I had some moments of more contemplation and delving into my own experiences, which are necessary to make art. But
it wasn't just first thought, best thought all the time.
No. But I made quite a few watercolors. That's what I do most. I did a lot of oil paintings. I guess that was probably last December, so that doesn't count as 2016. But I think I painted a bit in oil into 2016, and then recently I've done a few oil paintings as well. Built some chess pieces. I had a little show that was like chess and playing chess and making artwork about chess. Hmm.
Very compelling.
Some little sculptures, all kinds of stuff. I don't know. Just whatever comes to my mind, I kind of build it.
I was really disappointed that you just left out the nudes masturbating in trees. I think the listeners need to know more about Jack Bangeter's nudes masturbating in trees.
Yeah, those are some little watercolor sculptures. I cut out flat people out of flat paper and then bend them around so that they can hang onto trees and are masturbating. And then I'd give them a paint job.
I actually have two of them hanging in my living room right now.
Do you?
Yeah, my children are huge fans.
Okay, cool.
Priceless. Jack, the other thing that I know you for, the social media, it's a very slowly accreting artwork. People are always asking me about what's the current status of Jack's Lego sculpture. And what was the
I just found two pieces.
Yeah.
Two pieces for my Lego sculpture today. I'm guessing those will be the last of the year. I don't find them too often, but man, I'm at 24, 25 pieces now, something like that.
And it's just whenever you find a Lego piece, you add it to the sculpture.
There have been a few rules. Once I found a whole bunch of, almost a whole set in a chest of drawers that was out in the street someplace. And I collected the Legos, but I didn't add those to my sculpture. So it's not that I'm always finding them and adding them, but when they're one and they're in kind of a weird place, I take a photo and tweet them and put a geotag locator on it, on the tweet. And then I add the pieces to the sculpture. And I think it's looking pretty good.
So do you have a goal? Do you feel like there's a number of Legos that this sculpture is going to require, or you'll feel like you'll feel when it's complete?
So at the very beginning of the project with the Legos, I had no idea how often I'd be finding them or anything. So I just decided that for every Lego I find and add to the sculpture, it increases the cost to the buyer of the sculpture by $100. And then I guess the sculpture ends when somebody decides to buy it. So there's no end in sight, really.
This is how he's paying for his retirement, Dave. So it's going to have 30,000 pieces.
I've been working on it for almost 3 years, so it's a slow slow accumulation of a retirement.
So
that works better than savings, actually, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So two other questions, Jack. I know we talked a little bit about the painting of your dog that you're not going to sell, the art and I'm forgetting.
Puppy as Barack.
Thank you. Puppy as Barack. That was the name. But the favorite piece you made this year, the work that you're most proud of, that you think reflects your year best.
I don't know. I think one of my chess paintings kind of excites me the most recently. I had a I had an assistant that helped me paint it, which is something that I'd never done before. And I just gave the reins over to small parts that I wanted to kind of battle with later, with a different artist's hand in the work. You kind of have to take some of the elements that come out of their approach and mix them back in and work with them. So I'm always up for a challenge when I make artwork. And that was a pretty good one. It's an oil painting based on some ancient Greek pots with Achilles and Ajax playing some kind of board game. But it looks like they're playing chess. So I've kind of taken that imagery and I've done my own version of it.
Cool. Is that a work for sale? Is there a representation that interested buyers can see of it?
Yeah, I'll get you an image and we can put it up on the little podcast notes or whatever.
There are a lot of art collectors that listen to our end of year review to see what they need to add to their collection. So,
all right.
But it's interesting you use the collaborator because there are creative mediums where people frequently do that, and then but like visual arts, you don't. That's not something you frequently hear about. What led you to do that? What made you think about doing that?
There's sort of an interesting tradition with it in painting. Some of the old greats had basically factories of like students and whatever that were doing their paintings for them.
Yeah.
I don't want that kind of approach. That exists in today's contemporary art world as well. Artists come up with an idea of a painting that they want. And then they hire an artist, usually kind of young artists out of school, to come and do the whole painting. But that's again a different approach. Yeah, I don't know. I think just that little bit of excitement for me turned me on to it.
Okay, next question. Coolest show you went to? You live in L.A. Most interesting art you saw this year?
Well, I really, really like this little show that a friend of mine, John Kilduff, puts together during Art Basel in Miami. He has in his backyard a tiny art fair called Art Basel, which incorporates little basil plants into each gallery's 1 foot cubed gallery booth. And all kinds of artists, some of the top galleries in L.A., did some booths this year, and I did a booth. I'm not a top gallery or a top artist, really, but then it goes all the way down to, like, total amateurs. Some people that are not artists at all participated. So it's a real variety. You get a real vision of, like, what all kinds of people are thinking about and making as artwork.
Cool. What's 2017 looking like art-wise? Give us some predictions. What's going to happen next year, and what do you think should happen?
Well, of course, I'm going to finally become famous in 2017, so that's nice. Something that everybody should look forward to.
Yeah. Nice.
There are going to be nudes masturbating in trees everywhere you look. but beyond that, I think
Talking about making America great again.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and speaking of making America great, I think a lot of artwork will be covered in gold as a kind of a statement about our future president. And I think that maybe along with this future president, we may get more humanistic artwork in the conceptual art world. That's often kind of distant, you know, long descriptions. You need to read a lot of things. I think people will try and pull that back and try and get in touch with people a little more, get some kind of communication with the regular viewers.
And I expect an explosion in Trump portraits because we've already seen a lot of great ones. And we know that Trump is willing to pay for them. With charitable funds even, if necessary, because it's an important artwork and it's an important thing that we need out there. So I'd like to see more, personally.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's probably going to be one of the things, too, though. I'm not sure they're going to be, like, really nice portraits of this guy.
It's going to be, like, Francis Bacon stuff.
Yeah, maybe Francis Bacon stuff, or, yeah, just, I don't know. I think most artists aren't fans. But I think you're right that there may be more portraits of this president than any other in history.
You've been seeing the people lining up to play at the inauguration. I don't know what you mean by saying artists aren't famous. Stallone is up for the chairmanship of the NEA, National Endowment for the Arts. We hope that happens. That'd be really
good
for the arts.
Is he really?
That's the rumor.
That's amazing.
Wait, really Sylvester Stallone?
No, Frank. Frank Stallone. okay, so we did high culture. Jack, we don't have much time, and we're going to segue into the film critic next. So we need to talk TV. This is maybe not as high culture as some of the art you've been talking about here, but give us some TV recommendations. What have you been into this year?
I mean, this is an old show, but I watched a lot of Trailer Park Boys. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but
it's like
hilarious.
A cross-eyed guy with glasses, kind of?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's kind of a bit of a plot line, but mostly it's just total fun.
We love fun.
I think that would be my recommendation, just because I think that we need to, like, lighten up our spirits here a little bit next year.
I think if you want weird fun, I think it's L.A.-based. Maria Bamford, we really like in our house. Laurel's a big fan. She's got a Netflix show called Lady Dynamite. That was super weird and quite good.
Okay.
And if we went serious, we also watched, there's a BBC series, 2 seasons, 6 episodes, called Detectorists. These guys that use metal detectors to search for old treasure. They're like amateurs. It's just... It's the guy who played Gareth from the British The Office is like the main guy in it. And it's a really lovely, it's pretty serious drama with some funny parts. It was a beautiful, quiet, well-made TV show that we enjoyed.
I've met a couple of those guys with metal detectors every once in a while. I mean, they always seem like they're kind of hermit-esque or something. Oh, yeah. I always make a point to try and talk to people like that because I think they've got a maybe interesting perspective. And I can imagine that maybe they're leading kind of a quiet lives. Yeah.
Yeah. And because they're in England, they're eccentrics, and they have an eccentric hobby, it's like double good.
Yeah.
So I watched a Netflix show. It was actually a really big hit. I really enjoyed it. Stranger Things. It was kind of an 80s Stephen King kind of throwback. And yeah, I don't binge watch stuff because I just don't have time. But this one we watched in about a week. I just couldn't handle it. I had to see what was happening. And yeah, little children being terrorized by monsters. Fantastic.
Yeah, I liked that one also. I watched that. I thought it was had some homages to Twin Peaks as well.
A lot of Spielberg kind of homages. And really interesting backing soundtrack. They did a lot of kind of Twin Peaks sounding synth music that was just really dark in the background. It sounded very 80s, but modernly composed. Just really, really interesting.
Are you looking forward to the next season?
I don't feel like that's necessary. I feel like I'm good with what I got. I feel like the next season's going to be kind of disappointing.
Okay.
What do you think?
I don't know. I'll just wait and see. But I'll watch it.
Have you watched Twin Peaks, Jack?
Yeah, all the way through. Almost twice, I think.
The first season is just fantastic. And then the second season, once we found out who the murderer was, we just kind of stopped because it just kind of fell apart.
Bob?
Yeah.
I alert you guys. Okay, last pressing question, Jack, and we're going to have to kick you off because we got to run a tight ship here. We talked about art, but we're going to talk about real art now. Meal of the year, best food you had.
I had a delicious meal of lamb chops from lambs raised on my cousin's farm, at my cousin's farm. Organic lamb chops right from the farm, the farm. It was perfect.
Where's this farm?
Elsinore, Utah.
Wow. They're well known for their gourmet lamb chops, Elsinore.
I don't know, but there are a lot of beautiful-looking sheep around there. And I mean that in that they look delicious.
Excellent. Not in the men masturbating in trees sort of way.
No, not in that way.
No, excellent.
That's more whales, Dave. Everybody knows whales is good for that.
So, guys, I didn't get out a lot this year. I, you know, twins and all. So my
meal of the
yeah, that goes without saying. But so my meal of the year, just a local restaurant in Snowflake, Eva's or Eva's, I don't know how to say it. I've been there like 10 times, but carnitas, just deliciously roasted pork, just so enjoy it. Like I'm salivating just thinking about it right now.
Love it. My meal of the year, I went to this place a lot. It wasn't the best meal I had, but it was the most frequent meal I ate that wasn't home-cooked. There's a little Thai food cart in Madison called Luang Prabang. They set up right near the Memorial Library. And they'll give me a 50-50 squash curry, tofu, and tofu pad Thai on the other side. And they make this homemade chili thing that they mix in there. Man, $7. I've eaten it probably 20, 30 times this year. It was great.
Awesome.
And you look great still. It's treating you well, man.
I know. Sticking to my ribs. I can't believe we did it, Jack, but in just 20 minutes, we covered 2016 in art. There was no stone we left unturned. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys having me be your expert here.
Perfect. And thanks, Jack. Catch you in 2017.
My old friend Jack Banger.
All right. Take it easy, dudes.
Thanks.
Yeah, see ya.
Perfect transition. We talked about one art form, and now we're moving to a connoisseur of the silver screen.
The highest art form, if you talk to Vin Diesel about it. Aaron, we're so glad you're here.
You can hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh, good grief.
You had to get I can't say that word. You know what I'm saying.
That sounds
dirty, Dave. Glad to have you on. Thanks for coming on so late.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no problem.
So the conceit of this episode, we're doing the year in review 2016. This is partially inspired by how much fun we had last year doing the year in review with films last year, and how much stuff you threw at us. And so we thought we can have Aaron come on and do film, and then we had to figure out five other guests to come back. And we did it, but we're going to try to do a whirlwind here. And the thing that we want to let our listeners know is the rest of our guests are mostly friends that sort of have expertise in their fields. And Aaron is also a friend, but he actually has film expertise. You are a professional film critic. You have been for many years. These aren't just opinions. These should be taken as edicts of law, I think, is what we're supposed to say.
Gospel. Yes. Gospel. Film gospel.
Film gospel. we are in the presence of living film review royalty, and so
I wouldn't build it up too much.
Okay, all right. Okay. But no, Aaron, I'm the wrong person to be hosting this segment, so I'll let Dave handle it. But
just turn it over. Yeah, no, actually, through the year, I've been reading a number of your reviews, Aaron. And kind of seeing what you think about different stuff. It's been fun after getting to know you and talking to you and. What are some of your top movies? Or do you want to share? I know you wanted to share something a little bit different. Maybe a few films that you thought were really great, interesting that maybe not a lot of people have seen.
Yeah, that I mean, everyone kind of does like a year, like a best of for the year, and I could do that too. But I did want to share some movies that, or most people might not have seen during the year, but were really really good.
Okay.
Yeah, throw them at us.
I mean, I've probably seen all of them, so I'll just get
into
this
part. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
The first one is The Witch. It premiered at Sundance last year. It's like this really atmospheric movie about this family growing up in it's like the 1700s, and they're a really heavy Protestant family, and they get kicked out of their religious community for being too religious.
Always a
like
good sign. Always a good sign.
Yeah. And so the dad moves them out into the wilderness, and one day their youngest child goes missing.
Ooh.
And, you know, there's this idea that there's this witch out in the woods that could be snatching kids or whatever, but you never really know exactly what's going on. It's really creepy without being like grotesque.
Uh huh.
But it is, it's a scary movie without being like overtly like a horror movie. It's more psychological thriller.
Uh huh.
It's good. And Steele, you'd love it.
I bet I would. Is it set in New England or set in Europe?
New England.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Puritan witchcraft.
Yeah. I'm up for Puritans. It. Yep. Yep. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Back then, you either went further religious or you became a witch. That was one of the two ways you went. So
I'm glad this is a film.
This movie covers both of them. So
yeah.
Nice.
Good stuff. The next one was a small movie called Krisha. And this is about like an older lady. She goes to Thanksgiving dinner with her family. And it's just got this weird vibe to it where you don't know exactly like she's kind of like the outcast, but you don't know why she's the outcast. But there's like this tension building between the family and her. And it's expertly done. It really is. It's kind of like this idea that going to your family during the holidays can actually turn into some sort of horror movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does it really escalate to that point, or is it just like a tension building?
You feel like at some point she's just going to kill everyone. That's the tension that it builds. But there are some really cool surprises that happen in it. And I mean, it's really well acted, and it's the director's first movie that he's done, and I really, really liked it.
So this was the director. I read a little bit about this film. This was one of the few, I never seen movies, but I did read about it, and I think I read about it because this guy used to work for Tree of Life. What's his name?
Terrence Malick.
Yeah, did he work for, he was like an intern or something for Terrence Malick.
I don't know. That's the first time hearing about it. But it would make sense because his visual style in the movie is very much like Malick. Not as concerned with, you know, atmosphere and stuff, but like the camera movements, like a lot of it is like single take and stuff like that. It's really a well done movie though.
Keep it coming, man. This is good.
Yeah.
The next one, I think Steele's going to love this next one. So,
does it have Danny DeVito in it? Because that's my...
No, but it has... Okay, so it's called Swiss Army Man.
Swiss Army Man, okay.
And it stars Daniel Radcliffe.
Is that Harry Potter?
And Paul Dano.
Harry Potter.
Yes.
Okay.
But Daniel Radcliffe plays a corpse. So... Yeah, it's great. So,
is this
Paul Dano's character is stranded on an island, and he's about to kill himself because he can't get off the island. And right when he's about to hang himself, he notices this body wash up on the shore, and it's Daniel Radcliffe, and he's a corpse. And the movie is the weirdest movie I have seen this year, but it is so great. It's almost like... It's like a buddy comedy between this guy and this corpse. And he finds out that this corpse can do everything, including becoming a motorboat with his farts. Gets him off the island.
So yeah. The kids will like this too.
it's amazing.
So is it considered a Harry Potter sequel or not in the canon?
I don't know. It is a magical corpse. So.
Wow. It sounds like a crazy, crazy premise. I think I might want to see that one too.
It is crazy.
These are great recommendations. We're not going to get this from friggin' Gene Siskel.
I think
he's dead.
Yeah,
exactly. Talk about reanimating a corpse. He'd probably have terrible reviews this year.
But just a question, like this famous actor Harry Potter being the corpse. Like, did you feel like that was an important part of the film, that it was this famous guy doing this? It seems like a strange casting choice, or even a strange choice for him.
I don't know. I don't know if him in it is important, but he's really good in it. Like, I put him on my supporting actor list at the end of the year.
As a corpse.
Yeah. You just gotta see. You've just got, it's so weird. It's just the weirdest, but it's good stuff.
Okay.
All right, you got a couple more for us, right?
Yeah, the next one I heard, actually Steele recommended this to me before I went to Sundance.
But I didn't actually see it.
Yes, it's just someone that you know.
Yeah, so we had Jack Bangeter just on. Jack's older brother, Nels, my best friend in high school's older brother, was the editor of this film. He's a really, really great editor.
Okay, so yes, he is an amazing editor because this is edited amazingly. but it is called Camera Person. It's directed by a woman named Kirsten Johnson.
That's
her name, right?
Yeah.
And the thing that's – it's a documentary, and the thing that's so special about this movie is it's a movie completely constructed out of parts that didn't make other movies. So it's complete, like, B-roll that Kirsten Johnson has shot in other movies, and then she uses this stuff that she never used in other movies to create this kind of documentary narrative of what it's like to be a filmmaker. And there's some amazing stuff in this movie, and it kind of jumps around between these different subjects that she's filming. It really highlights what it takes to make a movie and how much editing is involved in making movies.
Sure.
Because it's all this completely different footage from all these different things that is edited together into a storyline almost.
So it's a very coherent, flowing picture, even though it's from all these different sources.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, usually documentaries, when you watch a documentary, it's either like an activist documentary or it's got like a specific subject.
Yeah.
Right. But this is more, you're just watching these images and they start to form a sort of story as it goes along, but there's no like specific subject other than the subject of making film and the art of it. Mm. But there's one scene in it where she's filming this child that has a hatchet. He's like playing with a hatchet, and it is like one of the most intense scenes I saw last year, because you don't know what's going to happen. And when the child finally puts down the hatchet, you hear her like sigh, like, whew, like, yeah, exactly. And there's just little things like that in this movie that really make it really special.
All right. That's definitely one I wanted to see all year. This is one film I am going to see in 2017. I may not get to 5 or 6 movies in total, but that's one I will see in 2017.
Yeah, you've got to see it.
This last one makes me think of our missions. Does it have anything to do with England?
New England. It's Boston.
All right.
Close.
It's always Boston. It's always Boston.
Yeah, this one's called Manchester by the Sea. And it's a weepy drama, but it's really, really well acted. Casey Affleck is the main actor in it, and it's about this guy who...
We like Casey Affleck.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm actually a big fan.
Drowning Mona is probably a Pantheon movie for Dave.
He has to come back to his hometown to take care of his nephew because his brother has passed away, so he needs to take care of his nephew, but he's got some stuff in his past that doesn't, you know, that he'll find it hard to take care of kids because of stuff that's happened in his past. But it's just... No.
Oh, good. I was like, maybe not weeping in the way I want to be.
Going a different way than that. That's good. That's good. That's relieving.
Dodge the bullet.
But this one's just all about the acting. The acting is just phenomenal.
So here's a question. I haven't seen Casey Affleck in several years. Does he still look very youthful, or is he looking like an adult now?
He's looking haggard.
Okay.
He's looking like he's lived hard.
Okay.
He has. Casey Affleck, he just hosted Saturday Night Live. I watched a couple of the sketches. I love Casey Affleck. He's great in drama. I watched what's the one that his brother directed him in a few years ago, where he was a detective, and that was great. And I like Casey. I'll watch this one.
He's a good actor, and this is probably his best performance for sure.
So I got a few important questions for you. So best performance by The Rock in 2016. Where do you rank? What are you saying?
I really like The Rock in his HBO show, Ballers. Have you ever watched it?
I haven't. I can't. This guy puts out so much stuff. It's good?
I like him in it. It's, you know, he's not driving cars off of cliffs or punching anyone out or anything, but you get to see more of his dramatic acting chops in it. He's like a sports agent. He reps NFL players and stuff in it. I think he's great in it.
But if he's not driving cars off and flexing his muscles, what's there to see with The Rock? I think that's Dave's next follow-up question.
He can act.
It's just made a B-roll, kind of like camera person, is what you're saying?
No. He can act. He can act.
Yeah, and just the charisma. Like, I'd watch The Rock do anything. And The Rock, of course, did his greatest comedic performance this year in Central Intelligence. Aaron, I know you saw this movie. You probably didn't like it. But The Rock, like, he was genuinely, like, he was in it with Kevin Hart, the guy that's, I guess he's funny. But The Rock carried the movie. He was like a comedic genius in this film.
I have to be honest, I did not see this movie.
What?
Me neither. I missed it.
I missed the screening for it.
I can't believe, Aaron, you've watched probably like 100 movies this year and you missed The Rock bringing his comedic chops. And just,
I know, I feel bad.
There's going to be a big asterisk on your best films in 2016 list. Just saying like, hey, I know there's a Central Intelligence would appear on this, but I missed it. So we'll just leave the top spot open this year.
Take it with a grain of salt because I didn't see Central Intelligence.
And Aaron, behind you, you've got two Captain America posters. So how did you feel about our Captain America film this year?
I enjoyed Civil War for what it was. The best part of Civil War, I thought, was Ant-Man, though. I thought he was great in it. Paul Rudd.
He's funny. I thought that they did a good job. I thought that it was a better Avengers movie than the last Avengers movie. So I liked it. It's one of the few that I was able to actually go to the movie theater to see. So it was fun.
So who plays Captain America? That's my question. A high-level film criticism.
Chris Evans.
Is that Thor?
No.
Who's the super swole guy that plays that? Cut this out. Fine. Keep going.
Wait. They're all in the same movie a lot. How could what?
I haven't seen any of them. I thought there was a super swole guy named Chris Evans that played Thor.
Chris Hemsworth. There's two Chris's.
See, that's the first problem. You gotta cast this movie, like, right? You gotta have two Chris's in the same
80s,
movie.
90s action movies where...
Guys, like me are gonna get confused.
Yeah, Van Damme plays twins in the film. Yeah, Chris Evans, he's Captain America and Thor. They're twins. It's really powerful, actually. Just impressive.
No, Eddie Murphy just plays all of them. You just don't know. That's how good it is.
Oh, my gosh. I would love to see a Marvel Universe superhero film where every role was played by Eddie Murphy. I would go.
They're probably bringing it. They've got every other idea out there.
Yeah, I'd go to the theater and see that.
So, Aaron, I have a lot of children. This is something that sometimes comes up, especially with my movie consumption. Was there a family film that came out this year that you really enjoyed?
I really loved Pete's Dragon, Disney's live action remake of the old. I don't know. When did the original one come out?
That's the one I know. I didn't know they remade it. I love the old Pete's Dragon.
Yeah, the new one is, it's not as corny, and it doesn't have Mickey Rooney, so
it's unfortunate.
Take that for what it's worth. Yeah. But I thought this movie was really, really well done. There's always kind of the thing with remakes and reboots where a lot of times it feels like a cash grab. But I took my 5-year-old son to it, and he really liked it too. He was getting emotional at the end, and I was really surprised that I liked it that much.
This is one of the few movies I took my girls to. There's a sad movie theater in Holbrook, Arizona, that was shut down years ago, and they opened it back up without really renovating it. So I took them to this one room movie theater in Holbrook. 5, I could see appreciating it. 3, they got a little bit bored. It wasn't quite a fast moving enough for them.
But on the bright side, they did get some mold poisoning, and they were sick for at least a month.
No, I took them. Two of them I took them to. One I was surprised that they really liked, but Trolls, kind of a ridiculous movie. It's just like, did you see this one, Aaron?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just like fast pace, tons of songs. I don't know why I liked it, but I really enjoyed it, mostly because my girls were like just enjoying it the whole time.
Are you saying that it was a troll-themed musical, and you're saying that is your favorite kids movie of the year?
Is my favorite theater experience of the year. I had all 5 kids, and everybody was just like loving it because it's just it didn't stop. The kids loved it.
Jensen family approved. Trolls.
Apparently, yeah. My wife can't stop talking about how good Trolls is, and it really isn't, but we loved it.
All right, guys. So this is how bad of a parent I am in terms of film. So Cedar saw his first movie this year. What we decided to do was he had never watched TV really or a movie.
He's like, what is this magic?
Yeah, pretty much. We watch like YouTube videos and music videos while he brushes his teeth for like a minute or two. So he's seen tons of like 90s hip hop videos, but he hasn't seen a movie yet. That's what he's into, man.
Mo money, mo problems.
Yeah, but not into that. Not like booty videos, but it's like, you know. But what we did was we said, hey, let's watch a nature documentary. So we get like a Richard Attenborough nature documentary, and this one was the one about young animals. But it was like, it's not pitched for kids. It begins with like, it was 45 minutes long. He was way into it. We watched it. We had a little popcorn. He was laying down eating popcorn, loving it. But it starts with how difficult it is for infants to survive in the wild. And there's like a series of chicks on a nest, the parents' nest at the top of this huge rock cliff that's like 300 feet tall. And the first thing the chicks have to do when they reach age is jump out of the nest 300 feet down a rock face. And only half of them survive. So you're watching them do this suicidal jump, these baby birds, like bouncing off of rocks. And like, and a couple of them will get up and like walk hobbling off at the end. And that was like how it started.
And you're like,
I was like, what are we doing? This is amazing. And then it ends. So it gets better. You know, you see some beautiful, scenic, high-definition shots of the natural world. And then the last thing you see are these young albatrosses that have to fly off of their island, and it's surrounded by sharks, basically. So these albatrosses are landing in the ocean, and sharks are just coming and killing and eating them. And Cedar's like, his eyes get real big, and Laurel's like, oh, here, come here, Cedar, give me a hug. You know, we're worried, like, oh, is this too scary? Next day, we're like, hey, Cedar, what'd you think of the movie? What was your favorite part? He said, the sharks eating the albatrosses. He loved it. He was totally, he approved. He was way into it. It didn't scare him. He wanted to watch more. So, wait, parenting.
And then you catch him, like, pulling wings off grasshoppers and
stuff. Yeah, he's going to torture animals now. But if you need a good movie for your just under 3-year-old, I recommend watching some hardcore nature documentaries about nature, red in tooth and claw, from Richard Attenborough.
I think he's ready for Diesel. If he's handling that, then there's no way he's not going to enjoy XXX.
I can't argue with that.
So, Aaron, any movie that you were surprised by that you just going in, you weren't sure this was something that you wanted to do, but you really enjoyed?
Speaking of sharks, actually.
Oh, yeah, transition. Good segue.
Yeah. Did you ever see The Shallows?
I haven't. I know it involves sharks.
Oh, though. Man. This was a movie that was like, okay, another shark movie. but it's a movie, like, Blake Lively stars in it, and her character gets stranded on a rock in this shallow area, and a shark just is circling around her the entire movie trying to eat her. And it is an intense 90 minutes of action. And it was one that I just thought, here we go again. But I was into it. It was a really well done little thriller that knew exactly what it was and made all the right choices. It's good. Good.
And particularly, I mean, she's in a bikini still. So, I mean, you're doing
that too.
I don't know who Blake Lively is, but I bet she's a real stunner.
She's a woman. She's a female.
That makes me even more interested in seeing it. Does it have any good surfing scenes in it? Is this about surfing?
Yes. They are surfers, nice. And that's what she goes out to do, and then she gets stranded.
I will watch any surfing movie anytime. I don't even count this as my film.
It's got surfers getting eaten by a shark in like mid surf. It's amazing. Yeah.
Ooh.
Is this CGI or is this real footage? They just sacrificed some surfers to some sharks for the.
I can't be sure, but I think it's CGI.
Okay. I mean, some people they're really method actors and they're totally committed.
The shark is really well trained. It doesn't bite all the way through.
I'm going to bite but not detach. So we'll put some teeth marks in the limbs, but it's catch and release, basically. All right, big question. Here's my big one for everybody. You guys talked a lot about 2016. It sounds like it was a great year for film. I can only imagine what it was actually like for film. But what are you looking forward to most in 2017? I hear they have some movies scheduled to come out next year. Don't know much about them. I need some pro advice.
There's a few. Yeah. There's a few movies.
Fate of the Furious.
Say that again.
Fate of the Furious.
Your voice was deeper than I've ever heard it, Dave. Something brought out the man in you.
I think I just went through puberty too. It just happened. it's Fast and Furious 8, and they just released the teaser trailer. Steel, I don't know if you're ready for this. You've seen a Fast and Furious film now.
No, I've seen two or three of them, Dave.
Yeah,
I'm a pro. I know this. Yeah, I know that guy.
Vin Diesel, Dom.
I know him, yeah.
He turns.
What?
The trailer is leading me to believe that Dom is the villain in the film. All it took was a super attractive blonde woman, and he's evil now.
Yes. All right.
My one question about this movie is, are they going to spell Fate F number 8?
Yes.
No, the most unbelievable thing is they haven't done
that. What?
Like what? They dropped the ball. It's ludicrous.
They really did.
Like who's in charge of this? Like, yeah, Fate of the Furious. You're not putting the 8 in there. Paul Walker
idiots.
Never would have let that happen.
Idiots. No. That's what I thought. Yeah, Paul would have stepped to the plate and said, "Listen, guys, let's misspell this."
But this is the last. I mean, there's two more after this, but they had nowhere else to go. They had to turn Vin evil, and it's going to be a great ride. But Aaron, you're excited about a film that I'm actually very excited about too.
Yes. It's funny because like film critics, we're supposed to always be into like the artsy fartsy stuff. But for me, my most anticipated movie next year is John Wick 2.
That's great. You know, I did Lost the Plot with John Wick 1. I think we did that Lost the Plot for that day. Was that
I think so.
And I really loved that movie, the original John Wick, and I can't wait to see what they do with John Wick 2.
The John Wick 1 is just such a satisfying, just a great movie, just fantastic action film. I mean, I don't know what his motivation for John Wick 2 is, but if it's half as good as somebody's killed his dog, I'll be thrilled.
I know, right? I mean, it's also my most apprehensive about it too. Because, for example, I really liked Jack Reacher, the first Jack Reacher movie. Uh-huh. And then they had the sequel this year that was atrocious.
It really wasn't. I haven't seen it.
It's really bad.
I enjoyed the first one.
I just, like, I love John Wick so much that I'm really excited for John Wick 2, but if they do a bad job with it, it won't be good. Okay, I'll be sad.
Here's a question I have for you, and it's a serious prediction question. Everybody knows all the money are in franchises. That's where, if you want to make, franchises is basically what rules Hollywood. Will we see a film this year that's so confident that's like going to publicly announce their franchiseness by including the number one in the title? Super mega film hit one. Like, they're just announcing that it's a franchise in the title explicitly in 2017.
Good question.
I don't think, Steele, I'd love it. You know I would support it. I think there's plenty of films nowadays that announce that just in their plot and in how the film is directed. Sometimes it's a failure and it's not going to launch. I mean, unfortunately, for every Fast and Furious, sometimes we get a Need for Speed. We all wanted a Need for Speed too, but it just wasn't a big enough hit. And then films like, I guess, Warcraft, I didn't see it, but it seems like it kind of collapsed under the expectations of a sequel almost.
Mm, bummer.
I have one question.
Yeah.
For Dave.
No, for Dave.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know that there's another Triple X movie coming out in 2017?
Ridiculous question, Aaron. Yes. And yes, I know that in it, Vin Diesel is going to strap on a pair of skis and ski down a mountain with no snow on it. It's just got trees on it, and he owns it.
My big question are those two, what are the guys that, damn it, I really should be up on this movie. There's like the guys that, Secret Service agents, the bald one and the hairy one, they're with the same name. They're like the Czech, and one of them gets shot and like dies in his friend's arms. And I was, remember Dave, I was texting about the guys in the original Triple X.
Oh, that's like that's 15 years ago. I don't think they're going to bring back anybody, but they're bringing back Vin Diesel back Samuel L.
I just made a terrible mistake, guys. I just Googled Triple X. I didn't even think. And I'm like, oh, yeah. All right. I'm going to have to clear my browser history and delete some viruses.
Yeah, wow. University might fire you now.
Jeez. Okay, anyway, I can't look it up, but...
Yeah, I'm excited for 2017, Aaron. When John Wick 2 comes out, we'll have to have you come on and talk about it, because I'm excited. I love Keanu. Everyone loves Keanu.
I'll either be really happy or really sad.
And we could also do the year in adult film in 2017, guys. I just found out about this new genre of film, and I might just become an expert. So.
Yeah, Cedar might be into that.
Yeah. Some bonding time. All right. That's terrible. Aaron, it was a real pleasure. Thank you for bringing actual expertise to the podcast. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Our listeners are indebted.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
See ya.
Good night, Aaron.
Off the Chain.
Check out what's over behind his shoulder, Dave. Did you catch that poster?
It's two Captain America posters. It's not just one. He's got a problem. He likes a man in tights with blue underwear on the outside of his clothes, huh?
He doesn't, man. Seriously.
No, Steele, I've told you before about when I was like 7 or 8, my mom made me a Captain America costume for Halloween. Like, nobody knew who he was at that time, but I had the blue underpants on the outside. It was awesome.